This is Rebecca Lowe, or Rebecca Lua, if you listen to Suboptimal Radio, and you are listening to Men in Blazers on the NBC Sports Network.
It's unbelievable!
Welcome to a Men in Blazers post-BlazerCon pod special. Oh, one of the highlights of BlazerCon for me was the conversation I had with Everton manager Roberto Martinez. Simply put, Roberto is just a remarkable human being. I think that came through as he spoke to a standing room only packed main hall on Saturday morning. We talked about John Stones and the transfer want-away saga as experienced from Roberto's perspective. We got his take on the American soccer talent pool, and we also probed the inspiration for his new haircut this season. There'll be more from Roberto on a BlazerCon TV special this Tuesday night, November 24th at 11 p.m. Eastern, NBCSN. Also, stay tuned to our social media and website for more BlazerCon content in the coming weeks. But for now, here's Roberto Martinez.
You know, I always say we organise BlazerCon to grow the game of football. It's all bullshit. Everton Football Club. Yeah. Sorry, Everton Football Club. Yeah. I love football. I love it. I love America. I love football growing in America. But if I'm being honest, the one thing I love more than anything else, the biggest pleasure I feel, is when Americans find Everton Football Club and fall in love. Club is so special to me. It's such a special part of who I am. Because the club has such a unique identity and a set of values, the collective is always more important than the whole. The community is always front and center. And so this next session on the art of football management, it gives me a dizzying sense of ecstasy. It really does. It is nipple tingling. BlazerCon, please stand with me. Give a massive Brooklyn welcome to a remarkable man as a human being in general, but in particular as a manager of Everton Football Club. Man of style and value, Mr. Roberto Martinez. Oh, Roberto, you could just stand there. We can all just look at you for 45 minutes. Roberto Martinez in Brooklyn. I've got to get out of the way before we start. I love your hair this season.
I had very easy inspiration, Roger. You can tell that. It's great to be here. What a fantastic audience. Fantastic.
It's like a dream come true for all of us. Every interview I read with you, Roberto, every interviewer, they all can't fail to mention your undiminished passion for football. I mean, football can become just a job. I'm going to start with an incredibly basic question, because I don't want to project. What is it that you love about football?
Well, I think everyone in this room will agree that football shouldn't be a job. Football shouldn't be a chore. Football is a way of living and is a passion. And I think that's the way I understand it. I was very, very fortunate to grow up in a family that my dad was a football mad. And I think that's where you get that passion for the game. And that's why I've been so fortunate to maybe, when you are under the circumstances, under the pressure of getting results, you can see that real enjoyment of being involved in this sport.
I mean, the job, the business, the hysterical stress, the brutal criticism, angry fans, cynical tabloids, narrative flips, crisis after one loss, a battle for resources, limited resources, the average tenure of a manager, 1 year, 3 months, if you take Arsene Wenger out of the mix. Your job to me seems to be 82% the stress. Describe to me in simple words, what is the joy of being a Premier League football manager?
Well, I think the joy is understand the fans. I think I always feel that you need to understand what the fan stands for and what they want to see on the football pitch, because we all enjoy watching a team playing the way that you would love the team to play. And you need to have that dream. What's the dream in our football club at Everton? We want to win a title. We want to get into the top four in the Champions League. And then is a journey. And I think you need to be clever enough to blank that, and you understand that there's going to be criticism when you got defeats, that there's going to be great praise when you have a great win, but you always need to find that strength with the relationship with the owner. In our football club, we are so fortunate and privileged to have Bill Kenwright as our owner, as our chairman, which is an Evertonian, which allows you as a manager to make football decisions. You can have more money, less money, bigger budget, smaller budget, but you can always make decisions based on football. And that's, as a manager, you get the joy on that, setting a really long-term ambition and slowly growing into that aim. You need to understand the emotions of the fans after losing, after winning, because that's why football is so powerful. It's part of it. The emotion, that's why you cannot compare football against any business. And I know there is a lot of finances that they are part of the results, but the emotions that we all feel delighted, we'll feel top of the world when we beat our rivals or we beat a great opposition. But when you get a defeat, you need to understand it. It's part of the emotion of the game.
I don't like to speak for all Everton fans, but I think what we want to see is Gerry D playing the ball into Romelu, cut to you on the sideline, going like that a whole lot more. Can't see that enough. Cannot see that enough. But I want to talk about the search for trophies, because does it feel like a Sisyphusian task where you're always pushing that rock up the hill over and over and over? Because in the moneyed world of English football, success and finances are so tightly correlated, the dice is always loaded against beautiful, exquisite football clubs like Everton.
Well, yes, I think you need to remember that in our league, in the Premier League, in the EPL now, the gap between teams that they play Champions League football and the rest is big. So it's not that it's impossible to win titles. You need to find a way. You need to be creative. You need to try to find a winning team that doesn't need the money in order to win. And the way that we, in the last 2 years, we invested immensely on young players that we felt they had incredible potential. John Stones, Ross Barkley, Gerard Deulofeu, Romelu Lukaku. And I always felt that if we allow these players to grow, if we give them big roles, in 2-3 years, we should be able to compete against anyone. Because if you want to buy these players now in the market, it will be 40 million pounds, 50 million pounds, and that's the only way that you can match the budget. So you need to be creative. You need to find a way.
So the way you're talking, we always follow the narrative of a season. We are almost week to week. It's like a show that we're always catching up with. It sounds as if you are planning not in seasons, almost in cycles.
You do. I think.
Where are we in the cycle right now with Everton Football Club?
We are very, very close. I think the answer.
Keep talking.
Maybe that's not the answer you want to hear, Roger. But I think with the, I'm looking at players, as I mentioned, John Stones, Ross Barkley, players that they are mature. They are players ready to win football games, and they're only 21. That's where you can really achieve something that money shouldn't allow you to achieve. So when you go into 50 games, this player's got 50 games, you develop the winning mentality and that big role mentality in a team. So I would say that this season we are ready to compete against anyone. We played the first 10 games. We played against the 8 teams that they finished top last season, and we've been very competitive. Now, how good we can be from now till the end of the season, it'll be the difference between winning a title or no. But I feel that we are very, very close to see these young players becoming important players, which is the key.
We're close, but when you assess what we have, what do you see as what we need to get over the top?
It's consistency. We've seen performances this season against Southampton, against Chelsea, that we are ready. Now, the difference between being a very, very good team and a winning team is having that mindset that even when you don't play well, you can still get a victory, and you need experience for that. And that experience doesn't mean you need to be really old. That means they need to have the know-how that it comes with games, and I feel that now we're getting very, very close to do that.
I want to talk to you about what you do.
not just you, Roberto, but a manager. I mean, we see them on the sideline. They're probably the greatest characters in like this Robert Altman-esque movie that is the Premier League. But that you guys are expected to do so much, be a tactical genius, a psychologist, a sports scientist, a negotiator, a data analyst, a master motivator, an incredible public relations expert. You can carry the hopes of a global fan base on your shoulders. And I'm a lot heavier than I look, Roberto. While the tabloid press are absolutely scathing, what is the most important role you believe a manager does?
Very simple, is the relationship with the player. If you can develop a good relationship with the player, that means that he's going to understand the message, he's going to listen to what the team needs. And as a manager, as you mentioned, you got so many roles to cover, but we got a lot of help. We got a lot of support. And I think every manager has got a little bit of an interest in a specific area. I enjoy the tactical aspect of the game, but every manager would tell you that the most important aspect is when you walk into a dressing room and you send a message that the player first understands it, and second, that he wants to understand it. And that relationship is what makes winning.
We watched Jose Mourinho at Chelsea this season, and the players are now coming out and saying, it's not the manager's fault, it's the player's fault. Which always makes me wonder, how much does a manager actually impact events?
Well, immensely. I always feel that a manager can only give an extra 5% to win, but a manager could take 95% in losing a game. That's how big the influence is. You need to remember, a team is 11 different brains. To work as a group, you need a direction from the manager. That doesn't mean that if you got those margins to win a game, they're very small, and you can affect them. But when the manager and the players, they haven't got a good relationship, the effect, the negative effect towards the team is huge.
It's that old Trapattoni quote that a good manager can make a team 10% better, a bad manager can make a team 30% worse.
No, I wouldn't say 30, I would say 90% worse. It's as simple as if we could get in between us, we get different groups, it wouldn't matter. If we organize a football tournament and you got different managers all over the room, I can guarantee you the winning team is not going to be the best technically or tactically or physically. It's going to be the psychologically the strongest group, the one that they find the better spirit, the one that they find the better fighting mentality. And that in the professional game happens. I'm not saying over the course of 10 months is only good being a competitive side. Obviously the technical aspects and the tactical aspects are very important, but that psychology, if you haven't got it, if you haven't got a feel-good factor, it's going to affect the results.
I mean, feel-good factor, football, it is one of the most chaotic environments that I've encountered, a Premier League locker room in professional sport. Owners have agendas, agents have agendas, players have agendas, the media have their own POV. I understand how a manager can assert control, but what's the secret to maintaining it?
Everything goes down to what we spoke at the beginning, is the passion for the game. I could sit down with a player and the player will end up having the influence from the agent, he'll have the influence from another team that he wants to sign him. The only common aspect that you have is the love for the game and that passion to aspire, to win something. And I think that's very simple, but very, very powerful.
Yeah, but there's other motivations. There's European football, there's bigger contracts, there's other club. I mean, the art of man management in the specific, apart from passion, players are complex. They're selfish human beings. We always project that every player that pulls on a shirt, this is not Everton players, they're exempt from this. We always project that they feel like fans, and they're not. They ultimately have a career path that they're thinking about away from the club, next level, next level. They're driven by egos, they're driven by dreams, needs, fears, bank accounts, Twitter accounts. What is the secret of relationship management outside of the collective in that one-on-one situation when you're dealing with a gentleman who kind of feels he's ready for that next, bigger, whatever?
No, I don't think it's that complicated. I think it's a lot easier than that. I think the player wants to improve. The player wants to feel challenged. And the player wants to enjoy his football. I always feel that when you assess a group of players, if you find everyone to have that football happiness, the player will enjoy, the player will develop, the player will be stimulated. But it's very, very simple. If a player enjoys his football, he'll be happy. I don't think it's any complicated issue of how to manage a footballer. It is true that in the modern game, they got so many influences when the season is over, because everything is over, false promises, and I would give you the whatever you feel that he's not getting at the moment, but the players are a lot easier to deal with than what we think from the outside. They got a real desire to become better, to become as good as they can. They are elite brains playing the game, and they want to be stimulated season after season.
Does the manager have to be the alpha male of the squad?
Well, I would say the manager needs to be the leader in where a player can find that inspiration that is needed. But football is not about managers. Football is about the players, that chemistry, that relationship, being able to express themselves, the skill, the talent that we see on the football pitch, and those players that they stop the ball in the box, and it seems that the whole world stops and they can control that moment. And football is about the creativity and the quality of the footballers, nothing to do with the managers. We're just here to try to help those players to enjoy their football.
But football is also about agents. How much of your time do you spend talking to agents? Do you talk to them in person? Do you talk to the player? How much of it is just talking through the press?
No, the agents is like any other business. You got good agents, bad agents, and worse agents. I think it's you need to try to find a way that you can deal with a player with a good, healthy agent that he wants the best for the footballer. Otherwise, agents are needed in the game, and you need to use them well.
How do you deal with losing? I mean, no one wins every time. When Everton say get outplayed by Arsenal this season, when you lose a massive game, how do you personally process a crushing defeat? For fans, it's so emotional, it's darkness. For you, is it far more rational?
Well, I think it has to be. I always feel that the big advantage that I have to face defeat is that I can do something about it. I can try to look to find the answers, to look at the solutions, why the things happen that way, and then you can start working on the training pitch. And when you are on the training pitch, you seem to feel a lot better about it. That's why I feel that as a fan, he got the worst job out of the lot, because you finish the game, you got those bad feelings, bad emotions, and there's nothing you can do until the next match. And I take that sort of feeling towards when I face my wife, and she knows when we had a defeat, she needs to give me some sort of privacy, some sort of lonely time, and I'm the worst husband in the world at that time. Yeah.
Second worst.
Not to my wife, I hope, no.
Management, our understanding of your role, our lack of understanding. What do we know about the life of a football manager? We, kind of the great unwashed fan base, or should I say, how little do we understand about what you do and how you do it?
I don't think it's important. Again, I always love to see a player that when we travel off-season and we go to different countries and we meet fans that we haven't seen, and that relationship. I see a young player meeting an Everton fan, has been an Everton fan for 40 years and they never met a player. I think that's the reason we're involved. I love that. I don't think the manager, we're here to win, to assemble good, strong squads, to have a direction, to have a great vision, but it should be about players. A very good friend of mine, he says that he describes me as, when we win, he sees me like Paul Newman, and when we lose, he sees me like Quasimodo. And I said, well, that's quite a good, that's how the people around me feels. When the team wins, everyone appreciate your job and they feel that you are the most beautiful face in the world. And when you lose, you need to accept it. You're going to be the biggest or the most persecuted person in the world. But as a manager, you need to have that continuity in terms of understanding what the team needs in order to grow, in order to progress, and have a real strong vision of where you want to get.
But when an Everton fan says, when they see a stat like Everton are the only club in the Premier League to have not scored a goal off a set piece, and they may or may not get on their Twitter and say, start practicing corners, for God's sake. When you see that stat, what do you see?
Well, I see people that they care and they want to help and they got an opinion, and that's very valid. In football, the hardest thing to do is to score a goal from open play. That's the hardest thing to do. So as a team, you need to work on that. The more that you can open teams up, the more you can have a goal-scoring threat as a team, the better team that you're going to become. Dead ball situations are important, of course, but you rely on good delivery, you rely on the opposition not doing their jobs properly, and you're not going to be successful on the long term if you're relying on dead ball situations to score goals. So the reality is, as a team, if you can create a good goal-scoring threat, you'll become a very good team and a winning team over the course of a long period of time.
I'm always fascinated watching you with the British press. I mean, it's an incredibly hungry group of men and women. It's a very brutal 24/7 press cycle that they are feeding. Do you read the press? And how much should we believe of what we read in the press, Roberto?
That's a very good question. I think I don't read the press. I don't read the press because I haven't got time, and that's the truth. I couldn't have time to read what's going on outside Everton. All I'm interested in is how Ross is recovering, how Romelu is getting ready for the next game. You need to spend as much time as you can. But clearly, the press, nowadays, we got so many platforms, so many opinions. One incident, one situation can be read in many, many different ways. I always like to help the journalists, and I like to have an open relationship with the press people because it's their job, and I think our fans need to be informed. But I always take everything with an understanding that if you win, everything is going to be great, and if you lose, everything is going to be bad. And I think as a manager, you need to see through that. That's why I don't read the press.
One area we are dependent on the press is feeding our imagination for transfer rumours. I'm interested, we rarely get to hear a manager talk about scouting. How much of your time is spent looking at potential new players, either on game film or in person?
A lot. I think, obviously, now is the window is gone crazy. In my opinion, I don't agree with it. I don't agree how wrong is to put a footballer, which you're a footballer and you're a human being, to put the human being under that enormous pressure of having to represent your football club at the same time that you have to cope with the rumors and the opportunities of a move. And I think that's wrong. It should be the window should have no competitive football, and everyone can do the dealings, and the players can be left to be the human beings, not the footballers. But you have to constantly look for replacements. You have to keep a really good knowledge about the possible players that they develop in all over the world in order to constantly improve your squad. We've got a system of 35 full-time scouts all over the world, and my office next door, I've got the head of recruitment, and I would say every day I spend at least 2 hours where I've got him knocking on the door and saying, you have to see this and you have to watch this. And obviously we filter things down, but I would say you watch at least 8 hours a week in footage of possible players that they could fit in replacing top players that they are in our squad, or players they can add something different.
As a manager, what was it like for you to live through the John Stones experience, the non-transfer?
Well, the
it's like winning a trophy.
It was a really important moment at the football club. From a football point of view, we had to keep John Stones. to have the support of the board and the chairman to say, yes, that's the right decision for Everton Football Club was a sense of pride and satisfaction. And it shows you that in football, I was so delighted to show that money cannot buy everything, and sometimes there are stronger values than that.
Was that cycle also part of kind of this new Premier League reality that we're just beginning to see with the television money, the $153 million that each club are going to get starting next season, where there's now a new tier of clubs like Crystal Palace, like West Ham, like Everton Football Club, with a changed sense of reality, with a changed sense of what is possible? I mean, does that now make teams like the ones I've mentioned contenders? Does it make you fear less now about the transfer window opening and someone coming in and prizing away a Romelu Lukaku?
Yes, yeah. Now, it makes a big difference, and I'll explain to you why. Normally, as a football club, you had to somehow invest on good players or your own players in order to balance the books. So that means every season you would have to end up selling a player. That doesn't make it right, but that was the reality. From a financial point of view, you knew that at the end of every season, you had to sell a player. Now, with a new television deal, financially, you can run the football club in a way that you just don't have to sell any players. You can just have a football strategy, and from that point, run the football club. And that's made a big, big difference. And I think it teaches a good lesson to the younger generation, not just in football, in life, that there are things that you need to be planning and you need to have that direction, and not finances should dictate everything. And I think it's another case. West Brom were very, very strong with Berahino, not allowing him to move on. And I thought that was, again, a very good example that whenever it's right for the football club, a transaction can be made.
You talk about the next generation, youth development. Everton are a club with a proud track record, an incredible pipeline. Wayne Rooney, Jack Rodwell, Ross Barkley. How much of your time is spent on that aspect, or is it really, for a Premier League manager, about good delegation?
I think it's both. It's both. I think you need to... There are two major aspects. One is the football idea and the football philosophy needs to come from the first team, because it's no good to have a young player working at the age of 16, 17, 18 in a certain way, and then when he gets into the first team, he needs to learn again. So it needs to be a real clear path. And the second one, which is probably the most important one, is setting a good way of bridging the gap from under 18s to the first team. Nobody is ready at 18 or 19 to play in the first team unless you're an exceptional talent. Wayne Rooney could be ready at 17. That's only one in probably 1 million footballers. And that's why as a football club and as a manager, you need to set that path and you need to bridge that gap. We're doing it with Joe Royal. His job is just to work individually with every player to send them out on loan, to improve in certain parts of the game for him to be able to challenge in the first team. We got now Brendan Galloway, a boy, left back, 19. That is, for me, is going to become one of the most special left-footed defenders in the game. We're talking about a two-year process that nobody's seen behind the first team environment when we signed him from MK Dons in league, in the third level of British game. So that focus, that individual work is vital, and that has to come from the manager.
Slight segue out for a second. American players, be honest, how often have you scouted or looked at game tape from an MLS player?
Many, many times. I've got incredible respect for, obviously I'm spoiled. I'm working probably in my eyes with the best ever American football player, which is Tim Howard. You could assess a player, you could analyze a player. What I like about Tim is when I walk into the dressing room, I feel safe. I feel he's going to control Phil Jagielka, he's going to control Gareth Barry, he's going to control Leighton Baines, As a manager, you got a lot of work done. It's just incredible the way he works on a daily basis. He's got the desire of a young man. He's played 400 competitive games for Everton, 10 seasons. It's just, for me, from a mental point of view, is as good as I've ever worked with. So I always had that in mind, finding good talent in the USA. But it's difficult, difficult because the way the MLS works and they own the rights. We got the problem with the work permit. It's not easy to get a visa unless the players play over 75% with the national team. But there is a lot of talent coming through, loads of talent.
But is there also a stigma attached? I mean, if you were offered two players who are identical, same position, identically skilled, one is from Argentina and one comes from Stanford University and his name is Jordan Morris, and one is from America. Do you believe that in modern football reality in England, people, you're always going to take the Argentinian? Is there still that stigma?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. No, I don't think you would go down to compare two players. I think in football, you find an individual look of every footballer. I don't think the nationality comes into play at all. I would say that speaking English or not is a big factor. Sometimes you would go into someone that he speaks well in English because you know the adaptation period in the EPL is going to happen. Is that whatever? I don't care where the player has been. A player that he comes into the British game, into the English Premier League, is going to have an adaptation period. That adaptation period could be shorter or longer, depending of the many times from how quickly the family will adapt to the way of living in Britain, if they speak English or not, the physicality of the game, what position they play on the pitch, because depending on what position the referee gives a bigger permission with the contact. So that adaptation period could play a big part of making a decision. If you're signing a player in January and you want him to be competing for a place in 2-3 weeks, if he doesn't speak English, that could be a big problem. But I don't think when you assess a player, you bring into the nationality at all. I think the American footballer feels a reliable footballer, an intelligent footballer, easy to coach because they are used to work with group dynamics. So I always feel that they are big assets. Whichever team you play against and you got an American player, you know it's going to be competitive on the day.
I'm just writing down Jordan Morris's phone number for you. I'm going to leave that right there.
He's signed for Seattle, is he not?
We'll chat after. Let's talk about this season. How do you view the phases of a season, Roberto? And when do you want your team to peak ideally?
Well, I think it's every season is different. Last campaign, we were in Europe, and we wanted to peak straight away. It's the first time we design. When you work another 10 months, it's very, very difficult to get it right in order to when you want the team to peak. This season, we wanted to peak probably in the first 10 games, and then just maintain it for a couple of months. And I feel we're going to see the best of our team at the end of January. That's how the season has been planned. For different reasons. It's because in the end of January, you got the competitions, you got the, if we are lucky enough to get into the semifinals of the League Cup, you got the third round of the FA Cup, and obviously you're getting into the most important part of the league. So end of January, I think you can enjoy Everton watching it from the distance.
Oh, I've got to go and lie down now. You mentioned the end of January. You've conveniently skipped over the crucible of the holiday fixture list. 6 games, 24 days, Crystal Palace, Leicester City, Spurs. It is a brutally punishing spell. I mean, your fortunes can change in a blink. Last season, we lost 5 of 6, and the campaign just seemed to ebb away. Arsene Wenger always talks about that part of the season with relish. He adores it, so he says. How do you look at it? Do you just want to just get through it, get to the other side, get the job done?
No.
How do you view that period?
Can you imagine you got in a period of 3 weeks the opportunity to play for 18, 21 points? You know that is an opportunity to get your season going into a different direction. Now, the problem is when you get in in front of that period that you're starting to get excited and you started to plan, and then you get a suspension and two injuries, then is the time that you're thinking, well, I'd rather go somewhere else and avoid this period. And that's how it can be a big gamble, a big risk. You play for a lot in a very short period of time. I don't think it's a problem about the players playing in Boxing Day and during the Christmas. I think that's something that is, the mentality is right, and everyone looks forward to play football in those,
in
those festivities.
That it didn't happen like this, that it was a more even pace and it wasn't such a brutal gauntlet?
I would prefer a break in January. And the reason is because there is a big difference between the Spanish League, the Italian League, the French League, and when you compete in Europe, there's a big difference. Then you go further down the line when the players go away to represent their countries in the European Championships, there's a big difference. It's a burnout. A player that he goes through 10 months with no break is not the same than a player that has had a week or 2 weeks break during Christmas, and that happens in Europe, and unfortunately, he's got real consequences.
So, Roberto, where are we? Where are we? We're roughly a third of the way through the season. Top four place, definitely up for grabs. Are Everton in the running, in your mind? What are we in the running for this season?
Our intention and our aim is to get into the top four. Are we going to get into the top four this season? That will depend on the next 12 games. What you do in the league is the first two-thirds of the competition is to get as many points as you can. I think now we've shown signs that we know we can compete against everyone. It's just making sure that you are consistent enough. So when you go into the final third, which is the last 11 games of the season, you got a run of games that you feel that you can get a lot of points. We're only playing against Manchester United and Arsenal of the top positions. So you're looking forward to getting to the final third with enough points in order to achieve around 70 points, which will give you that fourth spot that, as you said, now is open. Chelsea started slowly. That doesn't mean that they can really change the season around and they can challenge for that fourth position, but it is an opportunity for other teams. And historically, Everton will always look to try to finish top four. If it's not this season, we're trying to build towards next season.
How do you view the Europa League, by the way? Because we are going to be top four, but let's say we're in the Europa League again, knowing what you know from last season, how would you approach that differently?
Playing in Europe is a must. You have to play in Europe. I think in Europa League is a phenomenal competition. I don't think Ross Barkley would have been the same Ross Barkley this season without the experiences that he had in Europe last campaign, the same than John Stones, the same than Romelu Lukaku. And you do need to adjust the mentality. Last season, we suffered immensely when we were concentrating on playing against Wolfsburg, for example, and getting a fantastic result, and we couldn't get the same level in the league. And that's just a mentality, and you have to go through it. I just feel now we would be more prepared if we could go into the Europa League. I think we would be able to develop that momentum in the league as good as in Europe, rather than just seeing them as two different competitions where it really cost us at least 20 points last campaign in the league.
I can't stand the stress of not knowing how this season's going to end. If you think Everton are going to be in the top four, can you just wink?
I'm sure with the technology you could do something like that in Everton or something.
Everton. Oh, Roberto, I can't tell you, a massive sense of calm and relief has just washed over me. And I know I'm not alone. An enormous, enormous thank you to you and your wife for coming to be with us in New York City at this time, this crucial part of the season. I'm going to speak for everyone in this room. I'm going to wish you and your beautiful, beautiful club Godspeed for the season ahead. Can we just give a great BlazerCon welcome to Mr. Roberto Martinez?
Thank you so much. Thank you.
What a bloke, and what an honour it was to host him on stage with us in New York City. There'll be more Roberto and more pretty well everyone from BlazerCon on the BlazerCon TV special Tuesday, November 24th at 11 p.m. Eastern Time on NBCSN. And stay tuned to our social media and website. We will be releasing a lot more BlazerCon content in the coming weeks. Courage.